Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to this edition of News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. State Senator Jay Chaudhry of Wake County is a relatively new member of the North Carolina General Assembly, but the Raleigh attorney has wasted little time in plunging into some of the most important and contentious debates at the state legislative building. Recently, Chaudhry introduced legislation that would repeal the controversial unfunded class size mandate for grades K through 3 that's scheduled to take effect this fall. Chaudhry addressed an NC Policy Watch Crucial Conversation luncheon this week, and afterwards he spoke to our producer Clayton Hinkle about the class size issue and several other current controversies.
Senator Chaudhry, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to talk to Policy Watch today.
You know, it's great being here. Thanks for having me, Clayton.
Well, the legislature has been back in special session for several weeks now. I think a lot of people had thought that what they would do was address the class size chaos controversy, the unfunded mandate. That's what some of our listeners may know it as. Where are we with that?
As I've said, our coming back to session remains a mystery, but what's not a mystery is the need to solve the class size chaos issue. And to date, there's been nothing done with regard to solving the class size mandate issue.
This started a couple of years ago, the idea being that you would put in place something that would limit the class size. No one is arguing about smaller class sizes. Everybody thinks that's a great idea. But where it came off the rails, if you will, is that the legislature didn't put the money behind it. And now, as a result, as I understand it, schools are having to make some very tough choices about certain teachers that they may have to eliminate.
That's exactly right. So the General Assembly in 2015 passed this class size mandate issue, which lowers the teacher-to-student ratio. As you've mentioned, I think both Democrats and Republicans agree that that's a great way for us to provide good quality instruction to children. The problem is they didn't attach any money to the bill. And so today, as a result of the mandate, we see classrooms really across North Carolina, not just in Wake County, where they've combined classrooms. They have moved music rooms into the cafeteria. We see cuts in instructional time. We see even pre-K classrooms possibly being taken up for space because they're trying to comply with the mandate.
You've got children in the public school system, and I imagine that you look around and you're thinking, wow, if my children were to lose art and music, it would really put them at a disadvantage.
The other part of this class size mandate being having the unintended consequences is really that the specialists, or art, music, and physical education teachers, are arguably the first ones to get their funding cut. And, you know, for me personally, having two children in Wake County elementary schools, I have had discussions and conversation with my son's art teacher, who has come up to me in tears, fearful about whether she will have a job in our elementary school next year. And as I've said, that's wrong. That's morally wrong. The General Assembly really needs to do better in terms of providing support for our teachers.
Talk a little bit about what this would mean for the upper grades. Of course, we're trying to get the class sizes small in the lower grades, but I understand that this also creates another unintended consequence for the upper grades.
So what we are seeing now is that in order to comply with the class size mandate, it's actually increasing the number of students from 4th to 12th grade. In fact, I was at Briarcliff Elementary School in Cary last month, where I saw a combined 4th and 5th grade classroom. Again, very difficult to manage when you have that many children in the classroom, and also it's cutting into their instructional time.
Certainly parents are learning about this, and they've gotten upset. They've also gotten very engaged. I'll let you tell our listeners just a little bit about the scope of how many parents you've heard from in just the past few weeks. It's really astonishing.
No, it really is. As I've mentioned all along, I don't view this issue as being a Democrat or Republican issue because, as I've said before, the House of Representatives and the General Assembly passed a bill 115-114-0. That means every House Republican, every House Democrat voted to try to provide some temporary relief and flexibility for classrooms. Given the fact that they haven't done this, parents have been incredibly engaged across the state with members of the General Assembly. You know, in my office alone, we've probably received north of 1,200 emails and consistent phone calls and visits from advocates and really from parents. A lot of parents that have never really been politically engaged but see the impact of what's happening by, you know, bad policy passed at the General Assembly now that's directly impacting their children.
The House has taken action on this. Your chamber, the Senate leadership has not taken any action as of yet. You've come up with your own bill.
Well, the bill that I have filed in January of this year is an identical bill that passed the House of Representatives last February. It's a bill that provides temporary relief to classrooms. It gives local school districts the flexibility to address this classroom issue. And most of all, it doesn't cost the state a single penny. This was a bill that was passed, as I mentioned, 114-0. So it's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It's clearly become an issue for the Senate, which to date really hasn't provided a reason as to why they wouldn't take up a bill that was unanimously passed by the House of Representatives.
We were talking to the president of the North Carolina Association of Educators. He said, you know, as we get closer and closer to spring, it's budget time for these schools. It creates a lot of stress up and down the chain, whether it's teachers in the classroom or principals in the front office. They have this uncertainty because this issue is still hanging out there.
Now, I've said, you know, if this General Assembly likes to champion the fact that they want to run government like a business, we're certainly not doing that. And in business, certainly you want predictability, you want certainty. What the General Assembly has done by failing to address this issue has not provided certainty, it's not provided predictability. And while local school boards have until May 1st to put their budgets in place, the fact of the matter is, based on, you know, school visits that I've made, based on what we're hearing from across the state, school systems have made adjustments to this, which is already creating problems for classes and for the children in our public school, and that's wrong.
One of the other issues that you talked about today and that you're focusing on is principal pay. Talk a little bit about the issue of principal pay and why that is on your radar this year.
Well, just as this General Assembly has done with teacher pay, where they've moved to a pay model that really discounts education and experience and moves to a performance-based model, they've done the same with principal pay. The problem with that model is it's also created unintended consequences. And so while it has raised the principal pay from $55,000 to $61,000 as a minimum salary, it has also reduced the salary of veteran principals from $111,000 to $81,000. Now, this General Assembly has put a hold harmless provision in for 1 year, which means that principals aren't going to see a 25 to 30% cut, especially veteran principals. But if that provision were to expire, I think we would see the loss of our veteran principals in the school system. Really, the leadership of a principal in a school is a big determinant of whether that school is successful or not. When you cut pay for veteran principals, it really raises issues about whether you can recruit these types of principals to schools that are low performing, which are exactly the kind of principals that we want to put in place in those kinds of schools.
One of the other issues that the Public School Forum came out in their top 10 list of top issues to watch for 2018, released just last week, was transparency and accountability for school choice programs. I know you've given that a lot of thought, particularly with vouchers. Talk a little bit about what increased transparency you would hope to see this year for those particular programs.
I mean, you're absolutely right. The irony that we see with this issue is that while this Republican General Assembly claims that there's not enough transparency with the way that we are funding the K-3 class sizes, there's zero transparency that's found in what we provide to voucher programs. And so, you know, accountability measures, including the finances of those programs, the test results, whether those test results are the same that we provide in our public school systems. I mean, those measures of accountability just don't exist.
I want to shift gears completely and talk a little bit about changes that we're seeing to our judicial districts. That has been another issue that has been at the forefront of what the General Assembly has been doing over the last few months. We're seeing judicial maps redrawn. There's talk about double bunking in some areas. Talk about it from your perspective, what you've seen among your colleagues and what concerns you may have as those changes move forward relatively quickly.
You know, those changes are moving relatively quickly. I serve as a member of the Joint Committee on Redistricting and Reform, and I've been rather troubled by the fact that, you know, we get agendas that are issued within less than 12 hours' notice. We are getting maps that, you know, initially last year were tweeted out, and now maps that are dropped at the end of committee meetings, and it really doesn't provide the accountability and the ability to ask questions about about what will happen with these judicial redistricting maps. My greatest concern is that we don't really know what the criteria that this General Assembly is using to redraw the maps outside of the fact that they have talked about the workload requirements. And even those workload requirements, I think, were called into question as to whether the precise or exact data was being used in drawing those maps. But these maps have huge consequences. We know that they have disproportionately impacted African-American judges, and they've also disproportionately impacted Democratic judges, and this from a General Assembly that has now inserted partisan labels back into our judicial races.
Obviously, there are a lot of parents who are concerned about what's happening with the school mandate. There are probably far fewer that are even aware of what's going on with the judiciary and what's at stake there. What would you tell them? Why is it so important that they pay attention to both of these issues?
In many ways, quality public education and an independent judiciary are really key pillars in upholding our democracy. From a judicial perspective, this General Assembly is really engaged in a sustained attack on the executive branch. We saw this in December of 2016 when they really tried to curb Governor-elect Roy Cooper's powers. And so after the executive branch, they've really focused on the judiciary branch. And so in order for us to have a strong democracy, we have to have robust institutions in both the executive and judicial branch. And what the General Assembly is doing is really overreaching and undercutting that. From a public education perspective, I think what's happening with the class size mandate really is a larger reflection of this General Assembly's policy to underinvest in public education. If we had not engaged in passed large corporate tax cuts and given large cuts to large wealthy individuals, we'd be looking at $4.3 billion, I think it's forecasted next year, that this General Assembly would have to invest in early childhood education, invest in our university systems, and invest in making sure that we're hiring more teachers and building more classrooms so that we wouldn't have this class size mandate problem to begin with.
Senator Chaudhry, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Coming up next, a conversation with immigration attorney Raul Pinto about the hard realities confronted by young dreamers and other immigrants. Stay with us.